Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. I know today's election day and we have lots of excitement going on in the United States, but the rest of the world is also watching. But today we're not going to talk about the election. Today we're going to be talking about September 11th. You know, yesterday was November 5th in the UK and everybody was still saying, remember what happened there. And as I've always said, even in my speeches on 9/11 at huge conferences, remember the 11th of September. So let me tell you who my guest is today. She is Elizabeth Woodworth. She is the co-author of David Ray Griffin's latest book, 9/11 Unmasked, an international review panel investigation. She's also a professional sciences librarian. She's written books and articles about nuclear disarmament, climate change, and the events of 9/11. And in the world we're living in today, until we get the truth on 9/11, we cannot stop what is happening, not just here in America, but worldwide. So I'm very happy to have Elizabeth with me. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Maria. Nice to be on your show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, David Ray Griffin's been on my show so many times, and I've touted and I've actually advertised this book already, even though you aren't on the show yet. And I'm really happy that you co-authored this with him. And I do want to say this. I've seen hundreds of books on 9/11. Some of them are very involved. Some of them are very difficult reads. This is the best book for every single person on earth because every issue is covered in two pages. It's almost like an encyclopedia of 9/11 truth. So I'm really glad you put this book together.
Well, thank you, Maria. It's good to hear that. It did take us 7 years to complete this project with a group of 23 other people. So it should stand the test of time.
Well, I thought it was excellent. You know, when I opened it, I said, oh, another 9/11 book. But of course, I saw David's name on it. So of course, I wanted to get to it right away. And when I looked at the way the book is written, it really is. It's like a primer, but it's so simple and it's so easy to understand every single aspect of the official story. And I always call it a story because it was make-believe what we got from the government. Who were some of the other people that you worked with? Because 7 years is a long time to put this book together.
Yes. Well, we in 2011, we decided that the media was, the way they were covering 9/11 was leading to a lot of confusion because they were taking the most bizarre claims from the 9/11 truth movement and making those seem to be the basis of the truth movement. So we decided that we would create a consensus panel, and we would use a best evidence methodology that is used in medicine. And it was recommended to me by a former provincial epidemiologist in the government of British Columbia, where I worked, mm-hmm. and it, based on the Delphi method. So we invited 25 people we invited, and we got 23 people to join us in this experiment where we would formulate a consensus point. David and I would formulate a consensus point. We would send it out to these 23 people, and they're mostly very high quality academic people, and it includes Robert Bowman, who you probably know about.
Uh-huh.
He was he led the Star Wars program during Presidents Ford and Carter administration. He died in 2013, but he helped us with uh-huh. these points. I'll list the panel members in a moment, but we would send out the consensus statement to all these panel members, and they would give us feedback. And they weren't allowed to talk to each other at all, because groups can have dominant members, and if they're interacting while they're putting feedback out, some members dominate others. So if they can't talk to each other, that means we get the straight goods from everybody. And so we got the straight goods from everybody on 51 consensus points. Now, they return their feedback to me and David a first time, and we incorporate that into the original statement. We send that out a second time. They, with each other's feedback incorporated, they all reply a second time, blind to each other. And after usually three times, and this takes weeks to do, we get to 85% consensus. And that would be when we would publish a consensus point. So we did that with 51 official claims about 9/11. And the people that are, I mentioned Dr. Bowman, we have David Chandler, who's a teacher in mathematics and physics. I think he has a degree in physics. Chiedo Chiesa, who made Zero, who I'm sure your listeners that know about 9/11 are familiar with his investigation into 9/11. He is, Chiedo is was a member of the European Parliament, and he has a blog in Italy that reaches 15% of the Italian population, so he's very well known. Do you want me to keep going?
No, you really don't have to, but I think we should talk about who David Ray Griffin is for a lot of my new listeners. And I do want to let them know before you tell us, I still have a lot of those interviews here in the archives. So just put in David Ray Griffin or just go to the section on 9/11, and I'm sure you're going to pick up a couple hundred shows on 9/11. But David has worked fastidiously on this. Despite, you know, his own physical problems, this and that, he just keeps going. So to me, he's a true American treasure.
He really is. He started about 2003 on this. He is a very well-known theologian in the world, a very original theologian who works with another one, John Cobb. And between them, they've influenced a lot of thinking, especially in China. So in about 2003, one of his colleagues said, David, have you seen this evidence about 9/11? And his first reaction was, oh, no, it's just blowback from the way the U.S. treats everybody. But this person kept persisting, and after he looked at the evidence, he realized, oh, my God, there's a real problem here. And he thought, I can get published. You know, it's easy for me to get a publisher because of all the work I've done. So he wrote his first book, which was published in 2004, the New Pearl Harbor. And for me personally, when I read that book in 2006, it just was life-changing.
Right.
So simple, so inexorable that it couldn't have been the way they told us it was.
Absolutely. That was a fabulous book.
It was.
And then, you know, I don't remember the titles of his other books, but I know he did one just on why those cell phones couldn't have been a true story on 9/11.
Yes, that was probably part of another book, actually. He did a New Pearl Harbor Revisited in 2009. That was 6 years later. That book was rated on Publishers Weekly as pick of the week in November 2009, and that only happens to 51 books every year. They don't do it on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that happen, that book should have been interviewed reviewed by the New York Times and every major reviewing magazine in the English world, because Publishers Weekly is so influential.
Right.
And for them to do that, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. We'd worked all summer on that book, and then it got that review or kind of honor, like
right.
Book of the Week. Out of, there's 175,000 books published in the U.S. every year. So to have that one listed is really something.
Well, and well-deserved, for sure. You know, people still ask me, Maria, why do you still cover 9/11? And, you know, I can ask you the same question. Why another book on 9/11? Why do you feel it's important that we continue to keep this in front of the world?
Well, 9/11 was the beginning of a new way of thinking in the Western world, really, towards the Middle East. And since it happened, it's been harped on in the media continuously ever since 9/11. Every time you turn on the radio, there it is, ever since 9/11. And I couldn't stand it. After I read David's first book, I just couldn't stand turning on the radio. So I decided, well, I'm going to get involved in trying to defeat this story.
Right.
The reason it's important, it's been used to justify all manner of measures to legalize repression at home and as a pretext for behaving as an aggressive empire abroad. It's the sort of central support for American imperialism that has been going on for a long time. Like David's latest book, one of his latest books this year, I think in July, he wrote a book called The American Trajectory, Divine or Demonic. The divine or demonic is part of the title, is from his theology about mm-hmm. what those things mean. And that book goes back to 1898, when America first started its imperialistic thrust worldwide. So it's not new, but it's
right.
the latest kind of kingpin that sort of sealed America's ability to continue with its imperialism after the Soviet Union fell. That was a big thing. When the Soviet Union fell, there was no enemy that would justify continued exercising of American imperialism abroad. So they had to come up with something new. And they actually started coming up with this something new in the 90s. The neocons started talking about how they could create some kind of an event like Pearl Harbor that would galvanize American public opinion towards going into the Middle East. And that was the project for the New American Century, which I'm sure you've
heard yes.
about.
Oh, absolutely. And all they needed, they said, was another Pearl Harbor.
That's what they said.
Right. And then there you go. You had 9/11. But, you know, I also look at the media's role in that. You know, I see the media's role, you know, mostly bad, I hate to say it, in America, even when it comes to our elections. You know, oh, they have no chance of winning, or this is going on, or that. But the media totally bought the official lie and reinforced it. You know, every year on the anniversary of 9/11, I already know what to expect from the media.
And that's really true, Maria, and that's one of my pet peeves. I have another hat that I wear, which, and David also wears it, which is the very serious issue, the, you know, kind of existential issue of climate change getting worse. And in both the climate change and 9/11, the media has been bought out by the fossil fuel industry. And it's very simple. All you have to do is look at the top 10 global Fortune 500 companies.
Right.
And 7 out of those are either fossil fuel or automotive.
Mm-hmm.
7. 70%. So the advertising that supports the media forever, since cars were invented, is from those two industries.
Absolutely.
So is the media going to blow the whistle on,
of course,
on climate science?
Of course not. Listen, when I tell people that Fox News is one-third owned by the Saudis, nobody wants to believe that. Now, if the Saudis supposedly were, you know, the majority of the supposed hijackers on 9/11, why are we still doing business with the Saudis? Why is Trump protecting the Saudis? You know, people need to wake up and realize that America is not run by the people we think runs the country.
That's exactly right, and well said. It's not. It's window dressing. What we get.
Right.
The candidates that are offered for the presidency, really, it's window dressing to give people the illusion that they believe that they're making a difference by voting, and we shouldn't call down voting either, because there's always the lesser of the evils.
Exactly. I'm tired of voting for lesser of the evils or voting against. You know, this morning I got a fabulous link to a video put out by If Americans Knew, and they're always exposing AIPAC and Israel's role in our elections. And as soon as I got it, it was kind of sad when I went to YouTube, only 49 people had looked at it. But I posted it everywhere as soon as I saw it. So I'm sure I'm going to get banned off social media once again.
Have you been banned before?
Oh, I've been banned in the 6 years I've been on Facebook. I've been banned at least a dozen times. And
have
for
you?
30 days at a time, with maybe 20 days in between. But I don't care. It's like whenever you post the truth, especially about 9/11 or Israel or whatever, you can expect that that's going to happen because people don't understand who owns those big conglomerates and the kind of censorship that's happening here in the United States.
And in Canada.
Right. So, you know, I saw a really good meme this morning, what you said about climate change. And, you know, I like to call it earth changes. It seems to be a little easier for people to understand, not to say humans are certainly contributing to it. But the meme was fabulous. It showed fracking water coming out of a pipe into the ocean. And it said, we have alternative fuel. We have no alternative to water.
Good. That's a lovely thought.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I've just released another book called Unprecedented Crime, Climate Science Denial, and Game Changers for Survival. And my co-author is a medical doctor who has been an expert reviewer for the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that book. I go to the climate conferences, like to the Paris one in 2015. And I took this book last year to Bonn, Germany, to COP23. And there I found Dr. James Hansen, who is the top climate scientist in the world. And he warned Congress in 1988 what was going to happen. He was working at NASA for many years, decades.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time he warned Congress. He said, this is what you can expect over the next decades, exactly what's happening now. And this year, 2018, 30 years on, finally the media woke up and said Dr. Hansen was right all along, because they had been calling him a doomsayer and calling him down in every possible way for 30
right.
years.
Right.
So I found him, and I asked him if he would write the foreword to our book. And he said, I don't normally write forwards, but I will take it home tonight, and I will let you know by tomorrow. And he did. Next day I saw him at the conference, and he said, I will write it on the plane on the way home. So
that's great. Please make sure to get me a copy of that book so we can do a show on it.
I will.
You know, people don't realize, Elizabeth, you know, I did not start out my life doing what I'm doing now. Since the late 80s, I've been an environmentalist, you know, trying to wake people up to the environment, you know, with little things, you know, the little things you can do to save the planet, you know, how to save water, you know, conservation. And then as I was just doing a very lighthearted show, George Bush was starting to run for president, and I knew he'd be an enemy of the environment. So I had to switch over and start covering politics.
Yes.
But Trump makes Bush look like a walk in the park when it comes to the environment. Because he's just slaughtering everything from clean air to clean food to you name it.
I know. It's really fascinating that, you know, at the Copenhagen UN conference in 2009, which was expected, like Paris, to be the one that finally addressed climate change.
Uh-huh.
And Obama was president. And a bunch of businessmen took out a full-page ad in the New York Times pleading with Obama, please do a good job. Please make sure that climate change is addressed and that you actually come to a good agreement in Copenhagen. And you know whose name was on that list of businessmen?
No, who? Trump, probably.
Donald Trump.
Right. And then he gets in and he's like, I don't know the name you said before, devil or demon, but on David's book, but divine or demonic, I would say America right now is just showing demonic. I mean,
really
humans
is.
Have no love or concern for the planet. And yet all these people backing this lunatic claim to be Christians. But I don't see any sign of Christianity amongst any of them. And I mean, I know David is a theologian, and he's a man who actually walks his talk. But here they throw away the word Christian like it's a political sign. And I keep reminding people that to me, Christian is a verb, not a noun.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's interesting that climate change has not been mentioned once within my hearing in Canada, and our media has been full of your election. During this election today, like, the issues are immigration and healthcare.
Right.
And I haven't heard of any other issues. Like, there are hundreds of them that affect the American people and all people.
Right. Well, people have to understand that the same people that pulled off 9/11 are still in control.
That's really well said.
Yeah.
They are in control.
And if you look back, you know, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, I'm pushing 70 in a year from now. If you look back, the same people were behind the murder of John Kennedy. You know, I'm not saying the same physical bodies, but the same factions, the same packs, the same groups, the same secret societies.
The same. Yes, and I'm in the same age bracket as you are, Maria, so...
So we've seen a lot. You know, when I saw that bit out of Russia, I said, oh, God, are we going to have another Cuban Missile Crisis? But, you know, a lot of people here in America don't remember that. I do. It was terrifying. It was terrifying. As a child,
terrifying.
I found it terrifying.
Absolutely.
But the sad thing is we had two men in office that had a brain amongst themselves between John and Bobby Kennedy. To prevent, you know, nuclear disaster at the time. Now we have a president who says, what's the point in having nuclear weapons if we can't use them?
Oh, that sounds like Kennedy's generals back in the 60s.
Right.
You know James Douglas's book, JFK and the Unspeakable?
I have an interview with him still on my site in the archives. An excellent book.
Oh, he's just fantastic. I met him in Vancouver a few years ago. Actually, he's one of the honorary members of the 9/11 consensus panel.
Uh-huh.
And that book, and then the subsequent murder of JFK's brother, you know, in
right.
Los Angeles. That was a terrible story, too.
Well, it was a horrible time to live through, you know, and then you had the murder of Martin Luther King. It was like they took out anyone that we could consider a hero. And I mention it often, Elizabeth, children today really don't have any heroes. We had people to look up to, and, you know, we felt good about them. Of course, they were all murdered, including John Lennon. But, you know, who do children have to look up to today? They certainly can't look to the president for any kind of moral standard. They can't look at their ball players. You know, there's no more Joe DiMaggio's out there. You know, and I kind of feel sorry for this generation.
That's right. I guess entertainment figures and singers, but there aren't any really big singers like the Beatles or Bob Dylan anymore. The ones that were philosophical and wise and kind of pointed the way towards a good society, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have, I don't see it. Maybe I'm too old to see it, but...
Well, the only thing I do see is the young children, and I'm going to go to the Parkland shooting survivors. Though, you know, and I don't really care what, you know, some conspiracy theorists think or say about them. The bottom line is those children are voting today. Those children have gotten other young people behind them. They've managed to pretty much cripple the NRA and their donors. So, you know, these children today are becoming their own heroes. And I think they need to be supported 100%.
That's a really good point. And that also applies to the 21 children who are working with Dr. James Hansen, as granddaughter, in an organization called Our Children's Trust, which is suing the U.S. government to provide a safe climate for them in the future. They are suing on the basis of a constitutional right.
Right, and they tried to throw that case out.
But they
the court is allowing it to go forward. So I say bravo to those children.
That's right, but that's a case in point of children being having their own heroes of their own generation that are acting, which is a really good development.
I think this is the greatest generation since the baby boomers, since our time, since the people that revolted in the 60s. And when I get to talk to some of these kids, Elizabeth, I tell them, listen, you guys have to fight the same fights my generation did. It's your turn. But I'm happy to coach them.
Yes, good for you. It did skip a couple of generations, didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I know. And a lot of our generation, sad to say, sold out or bought in. But
yeah.
That's not in my nature, although I would have stopped the show a long time ago. You know, years ago, I got a huge money offer from a Canadian broadcasting station that wanted to carry my show. But then they listed all the different censorship things that they expected that I was going to adhere to. And even with the promise of millions of dollars, I turned them down and I said, I can't sell out. It's not in my nature. You can't tell me what to say or who to interview or any of that. I just can't do it.
Good for you. And so do you remember which?
Oh, I don't remember. At the same time, I was getting pitched by a big station in Texas. And then America put together what was supposed to be a free speech progressive radio station. They were calling it Air America. And, you know, when I spoke to the owners of that, the guy wasted so many hours of my time on the phone. The end result was he said that their board of directors would never allow it. Their stockholders would never allow it because I was considered a loose cannon.
Oh.
So I turned around and said to him, well, if you're going to be a progressive news channel, why would you name yourself after a drug running operation out of Vietnam? I don't think a lot of people remembered Air America, but I did. So, you can't buy integrity. You either have it or you don't. You know, David Griffin, he's a perfect example of a man with integrity. And I hate to say it, it's few and far between amongst any of our politicians today. You know,
what about Bernie Sanders?
Bernie was great. I thought he was great. It was the first time in my whole life, I think, I ever voted for a candidate instead of against the other candidate. But he had no chance. You know, if people understand the way elections are stolen and the way these candidates are picked by the same people who never lose, regardless of what side wins, it was a pitiful shame. And, you know, he's still out there active and still fighting a good fight.
Yes, yeah. You know, he's Canadians. Everybody here loved him. And Scandinavian countries would feel the same way. Everybody who's got a decent health care system, we only pay 9% of gross domestic product on our health care system here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans are spending 13% of gross domestic product on a health care system that's full of empty hospitals. And, you know, it's totally on the commercial model. Competitive, and that's why it's so expensive.
Well, we have medicine for profit in this country, something that wasn't always the case in America. It used to be illegal, but now it isn't. So we have medicine for profit, and yeah. You know, it's very sad because we obviously spend, I think, something like 90% of our budget on military armament, but there's such a small sliver that actually goes to the people.
That's right. It's that's the whole American imperialism thing that David is so focused on. You know, it's that sort of sense of American exceptionalism.
I don't see anything too exceptional about the way we run this country or the world.
No, but that concept of American exceptionalism has been around since the 1850s.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that America has this this kind of noble dream of democracy around the world. And I'm just proofreading one of David's books right now, so I'm kind of close to that idea. And that dream, some people really believe that that's why America is out there in the Middle East, out there, you know, with its, how many bases has it got around the world? Over 100, I think, in 100 countries. That America is bringing democracy and good values, Christian values, to everybody in the world. That's how they originally saw themselves,
right,
in the 1800s. And in fact, if you look at everything that's been done, like in Vietnam and in the Philippines earlier on, and so many countries where the U.S. have gone in to put their puppet administrations into power. Iran is another one. Mm-hmm. In 1953, the U.S. went in. They had a democratically elected president in Iran, and they put in the Shah, who
right.
was there for decades.
Right, and right now our target is Venezuela and Cuba.
Yes.
So, you know, it never ends. You know, when people say, why do they hate us? I would say it's our foreign policy. It's always been our foreign policy. But no one talks about our foreign policy.
But that policy is based on this belief in the American general consciousness that that country is exceptional and
right.
others are not.
Right. Well, when I was a kid...
I can't tell you what it's like to live in another country. You can only know that if you live in another country.
Absolutely.
What that feels like for the rest of the world.
Right. Elizabeth, we need to take a short break, but when we get back, let's look at how 9/11... actually connects to not only the election going on in America, but even some of the murders going on in America. So stay with us. Elizabeth and I will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Noll Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Okay, welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Elizabeth Woodworth, and even though we haven't talked much about the actual book, 9/11 Unmasked, I've already told you that you need to buy it if you have a whole collection of 9/11 books. This will replace all of them. You can make your point with anyone that brings up any part of 9/11 in less than 2 pages in this book. It's fabulous, and it's one of those books I'm not lending out. Elizabeth, I didn't mean to throw you off when I talked about 9/11 and our elections. But if you look at 9/11, one of the main things it did was demonize the Muslim nation, demonize Muslims in the United States. We have a president who has a Muslim ban going on. We had a shooting at a synagogue in Pittsburgh this week where a white supremacist went in screaming, kill all Jews, and blew those Jews away. And you may say, what does that have to do with 9/11? Well, even though the Muslims have been demonized since 9/11 and used as an excuse for Middle East conquest, it was the Muslim Americans that raised the money to bury the family members that died at that synagogue. And they said their first goal was unity. They never expected to bring in so much money, and they just handed it all over to the families of the victims. So it kind of, you know, the media, you know, also jumps on the anti-Muslim bandwagon. And, you know, they're constantly, you know, the 9/11. But what's interesting is it wasn't until the murder of Khashoggi that the media, the traitors in the media here, actually started to mention, and it's only been 17 years, the connection between the Saudis and 9/11 hijackers. I had never seen that in the media as much as I did until Khashoggi was murdered by the Saudis. So to me, I can trace pretty much everything going on in the news all back to 9/11.
Yes. Yes, that's the fabric. You know, the mainstream media has this blanket kind of control over the minds of everybody. You can't really avoid the mainstream media. And so this story has been knit like a fabric, back and forth, the threads of it, for 17 years. And it's the biggest lie that's ever been told in the United States, but it's been told so often that it's kind of developed a reality in people's minds. So even people who understand that it's a lie, it's a conflict in the deep part of your brain between all that conditioning
right.
and what you actually understand.
Well, it's hard for people to realize that there were American citizens, and not just Americans, killed on 9/11. That were killed by their own government. That's a hard concept for anybody's brain to wrap themselves around, that their own government would kill their own people.
It is a hard concept, indeed.
You know, we want to trust, you know, people want to have trust, you know, like the government is somehow the, you know, the nanny state, you know, daddy, take care of us.
Yeah.
But, you know, listen, it took many years, but the majority of Americans alive today don't believe the official story on the murder of John Kennedy.
And
it's the same with 9/11. A lot of Americans, I'm willing to bet it's at least 60%, don't believe the official story.
It is close to that. In fact, it's testified by the fact that our book right now, this 9/11 Unmasked, the full title is 9/11 Unmasked, an International Review Panel Investigation. That's selling on Amazon.com, the U.S. Amazon, 600th from the top book. And that's out of their millions of books. So that tells you, I couldn't believe that. Like the first print run was gone in 2 weeks. I don't know what print run they're into right now, but they cannot keep up with the demand for this book because it shows beyond any shadow of a doubt that 51 different claims of the official story of 9/11 are bogus.
Right.
And I could talk about maybe just one or two of those consensus points, if you like, Maria.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just remembered David's book on the 9/11 omissions report.
Yes.
So I was glad to see that brought back into, you know, 9/11 Unmasked, a lot of those points as well. And people don't realize Building Number 7 wasn't even included in the 9/11 Commission's report.
No, it wasn't. And so because it wasn't, I think we made about, of the 51 points, about 8 of them are about Building 7.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one thing that people don't know very, you don't hear very often in the truth movement, is that 4 massive annual military drills, you know, run by NORAD and the U.S. Supreme Command, these annual military drills normally are run in November, October and November, or in April.
Right.
And the 4 biggest ones, and I can name them, Vigilant Guardian, Global Guardian, Crown Vigilance, and Amalgam Warrior. These 4 drills were all rescheduled for the morning of September the 11th.
Right. I remember when 9/11 started happening, that a lot of people in the controls were saying, is this live or is this the drill?
That's right. And in fact, the official claim was that each consensus point that we present in the 2 pages you mentioned is divided into 3 sections. And the first is the official claim. Second is the best evidence that our 25 people have been able to come up with. And then there is a conclusion. So the official claim about these drills was that they did not interfere with the military response to the hijacked planes.
Right.
Now, the 9/11 Commission report did not mention these drills.
Of course not.
Except in one footnote, they mentioned Vigilant Guardian. And in addition to those 4 really major ones that take up most of the Air Force in the United States, there were 7 other drills that had been rescheduled for that morning. And some of these drills involved hijack simulations.
Mm-hmm.
So as you say, the FAA controllers were asking, is this real world or exercise?
Right.
And The radar screens were showing emergencies all over the place, and they, in the end, there were 21 reports of hijacked planes that morning, when in fact there had only been, allegedly been, four. So the fighters, the fighters on the ground, not in their usual locations, were totally unable to respond, and the air defenses of America broke down. So we actually have a newspaper article showing. It's an in-house newsletter within the U.S. forces. It showed that Global Guardian, the biggest of the exercises, had been scheduled for late October. It was announced to the U.S. Air Force people. So whoever changed that, I mean, that's an enormous exercise that involves NORAD, and it involves thousands of people. And whoever changed that after this March 23rd announcement in the newsletter that it was going to be in October had to have been in on the planning of 9/11. And that's one key area of research that any of your listeners that might be interested in what actually did happen on 9/11, who changed that air drill?
Right. Well, you know, from everything that I've seen and read and covered and films, et cetera, to me, it surely looked as though Dick Cheney was running that day.
It does look like that very much.
You know, I mean, you know, it, what's interesting is back in those days, I didn't have the kind of equipment to do a podcast like you do today. So everything was like really gypsied together, okay?
Yeah.
My desk looked like it was something from an alien movie because this was connected to that. I had wires all over the place, and I was waiting for a piece for my computer to come in, and that was the day it was stuck when they grounded the flights. And I remember it like it was yesterday, unfortunately. And one of my co-hosts at the time, who's also very brilliant, he had called me in a total panic because he had already figured out how wrong the timeline was that we were getting on that day.
Yeah.
So he immediately knew that what we were being told was a lie, you know, and where they sent the fighter jets out from when they had closer ones. Also, I think one of the biggest things that people didn't pay attention to was, truthfully, if that was supposed to be a terrorism attack, one of those planes flew directly over Indian Point nuclear power plant in New York.
It did.
Had they hit that power plant, they would have taken four states out. But instead, they only took out two white elephant buildings in New York.
Mm-hmm. That's more evidence that it was conducted from inside. They didn't do any really serious, everlasting damage to the United States. They just took out those two white elephant buildings.
No, but then the United States did some pretty serious damage to two innocent countries that had nothing to do with 9/11.
Indeed, which it had planned to do anyway.
And our troops are still there. Okay, it's 17 years, and they're still there. So we have no, I tell people, once America lands in your country, they never leave.
No, that's true. It's absolutely true. It's particularly true of Korea since the 1950s, where they drew that line. Mm-hmm. The U.S. drew that line that separated North and South Korea.
Right.
And finally, now the Koreans want to get rid of that line. But really, the United States is the most dreadful country in the world in terms of interfering with other people's business.
I agree, but you have to understand, most Americans have no knowledge of real American history.
Well, David Griffin's book, I'll say this again, I think it's one of his best books, The American Trajectory, Divine or Demonic, and it just came out this July.
Well, you'll have to tell him to get me one of those, too.
Yeah, you should get one of those. There's another interesting point that in our consensus panel, 51 consensus points, about the videos that the U.S. government has shown as proof that there were hijackers. And there's an airport security video allegedly showing five hijackers at Dulles Airport in Washington before they boarded Flight 77.
The ones with the date stamp 9/12?
I'm not sure. The one I'm thinking of didn't have any date stamp.
Oh, well, I saw one of the supposed hijackers, and the date stamp on it was 9/12.
Yes, I saw that too. Well, this is a different one. And I came across a report by a contractor who was hired by the security, by intelligence services in the United States. So look, there were 350 cameras, 300 security cameras at Dulles International Airport that morning. And this man was hired to look through all the footage of those 300 cameras. And it took him, he said it took him 30 days. The task took 3 weeks of 15-hour days to look through all this footage. Now, there was nothing released to show that there were hijackers mm-hmm. from those 300 cameras that morning.
Right.
So these kinds of facts have not actually been coming out until our book. There's a lot more like this in our book.
Right.
Because this is original research. Like this man, the contractor, he wrote this up in a newsletter for his organization or for his business, really. He was just talking about security systems. And in talking about these security systems, he happened to mention that he was part of this team that had the laborious task of reviewing all the video from Dulles Airport, with several federal agents looking over our shoulders, is what he said.
Hmm.
And so why aren't there any, why is there not any valid evidence that those hijackers were in Dulles Airport?
Because,
this is the question.
Right, because they weren't. Well, think about the Pentagon. The Pentagon must have cameras every 12 inches on that building, inside and out. Where's the video?
Exactly.
You know, you had the FBI confiscating video from the gas station right across the street immediately after it happened. Where's the video? And it's all these years later, you know, you just, I don't know, you know, how much of the news you get to follow. Unfortunately, I get to follow it all. But I'm thinking about that plane that went down in Indonesia about 2 weeks ago. And it was just a matter of days when they had the black boxes retrieved from the ocean. Where are the black boxes on 9/11? You know, I saw the rubble of the airplanes. You know, I saw I saw the damage there. Where is all of that from, you know, the supposed planes of 9/11?
That's a very good question. By the way, I do watch the PBS news here in Victoria every night at 6 p.m. So
Okay,
because
I know I'm inundated because I follow the world news all day long. Whatever's happening anywhere in the world, I try to be on top of it. So sometimes, you know, sometimes you may or may not, you know what I'm referring to. But, you know, the other thing that's important in your book, and you have a lot of coverage on it, and it was one person that I never thought would ever show his face again after 9/11. And then he showed up as Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I mean, how that criminal has the nerve to show his face anywhere is beyond the pale.
It is. We did a whole consensus point about Rudy Giuliani. In fact, this should be, I mustn't leave without telling your listeners that we have a section on the military and political leaders, eight of them, that morning. And where they were, what they were doing, as opposed to what the official account said they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were, these eight chapters, Maria, they're longer than two pages.
Right.
Because what we did was we looked at all the evidence of the high-positioned people that were around these leaders, like obviously Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and so on. But we looked at all the memoirs of people who were actually around them that morning. And we put together that the stories that were told about the whereabouts and the actual decisions and activities that were being made at the top were wrong.
Right.
Wrongly reported. And a lot of them weren't even there. I mean, it was arranged in advance that they wouldn't be at their stations that morning. So there were subordinates in place who didn't really have the authority or the expertise to handle the situation. And there were top people at the FAA that were absent from their jobs, that had been sent elsewhere. The chief of staff for the military, General Hugh Shelton, he was flying across the Atlantic to a meeting in Poland or Hungary. And he found out mid-Atlantic what was going on with these attacks. He left at 7 a.m. from Washington, and so he wasn't even on the scene, and his stand-in, General Myers, was there instead. And his activities, we really went into those with a fine-tooth comb to show that this, the acting chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Myers, that story was all, just didn't fit together. It wasn't consistent. It was, in some ways, this is the most interesting part of the book because it's such in-depth investigation that's never been done before.
Absolutely. And I do want my listeners to know you have almost 100 pages of references in the book.
That's right.
So, I mean, I looked at the book and I said, oh, God, how long is it going to take for me to read it? And then I was, wait a minute, a quarter of this book is just reference.
845 references to back up our evidence.
And that's a whole lot. So, you know, when people, people today that have short memories have to realize, you know, Rudy Giuliani is not America's favorite mayor. He's a criminal. He's always been a criminal. I'm not surprised that he's tied in with Trump. They're being investigated now for money laundering out of the Dutch, of all people, are investigating him and Trump for money laundering, including with Russia. And, you know, Giuliani made sure that all the evidence got out of New York City as fast as possible.
Yes. Yeah, his actions on 9/11 are very much worth looking into.
Oh, really, just the fact that he wasn't even in his armored bunker on Building 7 that day. He wasn't even working out of it, and it was supposed to be indestructible. And yet we're supposed to believe that Building 7 came down because of a few small fires, even when Lucky Larry said, we lost enough lives, pull it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the fact that the mainstream media has been on side for all of this. There's been a discussion recently on Op-Ed News, which you probably know, mm-hmm. about why people like Noam Chomsky, who is so astute at looking into American wrongdoing, you know.
Right, but he won't touch 9/11.
He won't. Now, some people say, well, he's just, you know, he's just a bit daft, or you know, they come up with these reasons. It has nothing to do with that, in my view. I think that the top left-wing progressive people, sort of the ones that stir things up, like Chomsky, and he's a wonderful man. He's done a huge amount to bring the truth to Americans from his very powerful voice. I suspect that right after 9/11, that the national security people went around to people like him and said, we really don't want this matter to be spoken about by people like you as maybe not being correct, because it's a huge security issue for the United States. If the whole public started thinking that 9/11 was an inside job or you know, something like that, it would deal a kind of a death blow to the image of the United States, not only to its own citizens but around the world. It would lose face.
But so many world leaders, especially in Italy, know that 9/11 was an inside job. They've called it out.
They have.
And you know, you have another hero here in the United States. You know, everybody's rah-rah, sis, boom, bar over Rachel Maddow and her show. And to me, it's like, if she's so great and she's so pro-democracy, why isn't she talking about 9/11? Why aren't these people talking about 9/11? Why aren't they talking about the stolen elections?
This is the point that I was sort of making, is that I think these people have been told this is something you cannot do.
Well, maybe they were threatened
By this. No, but what would you do if you were running? If you were Rachel running that MSNBC NewsHour, what would you do if you got a visit from the head of the FBI or somebody like that and said, "Look, Rachel, this topic is off limits," mm-hmm. because I know that one of Canada's magazines told me that it was something they would not cover. It was their policy not to cover it.
That's crazy. And I think I remember the first person out of Canada that actually did cover 9/11 was Barry Zwicka.
But not in the mainstream media.
Oh, absolutely not. But, you know, I immediately had him on my show, and I got to meet him in Chicago at a conference.
He's a great guy. I know him, too. And I first heard him in 2001 in November on Vision TV in Canada, which is a sort of little, it's not mainstream, but it's there on the cable. I just happened to trip over it one day, and I couldn't believe it. And what's the name of the New York, or the Los Angeles Police Department man that died a few years ago?
I can't remember his name.
Well, he and Barry were together on Vision TV in 2001, and it was mind-blowing what they were saying.
They were great. Listen, I've had all the best people on 9/11 on my show, and I'm really happy to have met you, too. But, Elizabeth, we're out of time now, but please make sure that you get your publicist to send me your new book and David's new books so we can do this again.
Absolutely. I'd be delighted to get those books into your hands as soon as we can.
Thank you so much for all you do.
Thank you so much for all you do.
I don't know what else to do, so I'll just keep doing this.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Elizabeth Woodworth. The book is great. This is a book you need to silence anybody on any piece of 9/11, and it's so easy to do. So there's a link here where you can click right through and buy it. Thanks for listening to the show and supporting the show, and I'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.